gentleman who's been carrying out a protest that you may or may not have heard of. He's called Paul McConville. Paul, good morning.
How are you doing? Frank, how are you?
I'm very good, Paul. Paul, you've been protesting on behalf of people who would suffer from mental health difficulties in McGabbery Jail, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Just explain for those who aren't aware of what your protest is and why you're protesting, what the backdrop to it is, please, Paul.
Well, my son, Daniel, he passed away in McGabbery Prison on the 30th of August last year, 2018. And Daniel had ADHD and learning difficulties. He's 22 and he's the mental age of a 16-year-old. And there's circumstances surrounding his death. There's a big investigation going on. But for the, what he called, to know that there's more going on in the prison, and there's no mental health support in the prison at all. For the prison officer, anybody can go online and just register. You don't need to have any qualifications at all. There's 12 weeks training, and the 12 weeks training consists of opening and closing doors, de-escalating situations, the management of prisoners on a daily basis. And in that 12 weeks, there's nothing even to say there's any mental health training or to be even sort of have any compassion for somebody with mental health problems.
Do you believe your son was in the right place? He had been due in court with possession of cannabis. For many people, indeed, anything to do with drugs is a no-no. But there would also be people who would be listening who would be saying it's hardly the most serious of crimes when you consider what other people are in McGabbery for. So considering he had the health challenges and the developmental challenges that you were talking about, and he was charged with possession of cannabis, do you feel he should have been in a place like McGabbery if there's no mental health assistance?
Even a young man, 22 years of age, with no learning difficulties, shouldn't be there. But with Daniel, because he was the sort of had the mental age of a 16-year-old, why is it that the police arrest him and, you know, they're out of control in the street and then they arrest them, lock them up, whether it's possession or disorderly, and then the judges don't look at the bigger picture. You see, Frank, they look at what's on the charge sheet and they think, oh right, this boy needs to be taught a lesson. You just put him inside and just hide him away from society, you know. And hopefully it'll go away and nobody will bother.
When he was remanded in custody, when he was sent down, what did he say to you or to the family? Was he fearful?
You see, that was the thing. We didn't see him before he went in, because he was living in his own place in the Lurgan area, and me and his mother and the rest of the family live in the 49. So we didn't even see him. I didn't even know he was in there until his solicitor got in touch with me. Two weeks after, he sort of went inside. So we never even got talking to him. And then they sort of ringing the prison to tell the prison to give your phone number to pass it on. We don't pass phone numbers on. This is the attitude of the prison service. And you have to ring the family support team in Belfast, which is a voluntary organisation who has an office in Belfast. And I rang them in the 2 months Daniel was in, from June till up until his death. I rang them and he was looking for to hand over the number. They were missed. They never got the call. There was nobody there. And then I found out after Daniel died, I sort of investigated more, that the girl that was on call at the time, she was in the hospital for 2 weeks. She was out for 2 weeks. There was nobody there to back her up, to stand in for her and take over. So how can you get messages into the prison to your loved ones when there's nobody there to carry the messages?
And was there a breakdown of communication between you and Daniel on the outside? Because I'm just wondering if he was getting any psychological assistance before he went into jail, considering that he seemed to have challenges.
You see, it was what he called, when you were getting appointments for him and then trying to find him, and sort of get him to the appointments was the problem. You know, this was a problem too on the outside, to try and get him to the sort of appointments,
of course,
to try and get him some help. But the last time I seen him, we were sort of, you know, it was a sunny day, and we were sort of having me, him and his younger brother. We had a good time, we had a good day, and it was fun. And I'm glad that, you know, we had that time. But for him to go in there and end up the way he did, and not even see him, and we didn't even see him before he died, it's destroying, so to speak.
It is very sad. It's a reminder, indeed, of what prisoners are going through when there isn't the right mental health backup in the jails. And it's something that is being discussed, indeed, right across the United Kingdom. Is your protest going to continue, Paul? I know you do stand outside the prison quite a bit, don't you?
Well, Frank, for what happened in that prison, and I know what happened in that prison, and I can't talk about it because there's an investigation ongoing. There's 29 statements of prisoners, and there's 27 statements of staff, and the Ombudsman has said that this is the biggest case where witnesses a death in custody that had to deal with.
Okay, and of course we will wait for the outcome of that investigation, but in the meantime, will you continue your protest outside?
Well, for me to sort of know what happened in there and what happened to my son, for me to walk away from that prison and leave all them or young, vulnerable young men in there, it would be, you know, I'd be as bad as the ones that's looking after them.
Okay, so you're going to continue to make your presence felt in what must be a very difficult way for you. I appreciate you explaining it to us, Paul, and for coming on the radio. The Northern Ireland Prison Service have given us a statement. They say, the death of Daniel McConville was a tragedy, particularly for his family. The Director General and Governor of McGabbery have met with Mr. McConville on a number of occasions to listen to his issues. The Prison Service is fully cooperating with the Independent Prisoner Ombudsman investigation into the circumstances of Daniel's death. The Director General has also recently written to Mr. McConville offering a further meeting. Unfortunately, he has declined that offer. Paul, thank you for speaking to us this morning. Are you considering taking up the order, or are you still determined not to meet the Director General?
Well, we discussed that through the solicitors, and they were putting proposals in place for the so-called the assist me in my sort of protest and my vigil. The proposals were more or less, you know, just go away down the bottom of the road, away out of sight, you know, and you can protest all you want. So I refused the proposals, and I told them that I didn't want to meet with them because there was no point, because we already had the discussion through emails. So I left it at that. But just one more thing, Frank, sorry, before you go. 22 suicides and 11 overdoses from 2007 in McGabbery Prison, and that's not including death by natural causes. This is what the prison service are saying. This is what they're saying, 22 suicides and 11 overdoses. So that is an awful lot for to be, what do you call it, for a prison, and for the prison service and the Southeastern Trust to be looking for and caring for prisoners, especially ones with mental health problems.
There's a very strong argument, we've touched on this before on the programme, for mental health training and indeed for mental health assistants, mental health nurses to be in the prisons, much more so than is evident at this moment in time. Paul, thank you for that. Our thoughts with you indeed as you continue to grieve the loss of your son. If you're just joining us, good morning. 02890 333 105 077 66 105 105.